Hi, everybody. I'm Beattie Cohn-Vredos, and welcome, welcome again to the Ask Beattie Show. And I must say that virtually every place that I am going these days, people are telling me that they're feeling overwhelmed, and they're down, and they're anxious, and they're depressed with everything that is going on. I think the coronavirus, it has certainly exacerbated so many issues and problems that people have been dealing with on a day-to-day basis for a very long time. You know, for example, the depression symptoms prevalence now was more than threefold during the COVID-19 pandemic, more than prior to. And I was talking to a doctor yesterday who is the Dr. Fauci of Ontario and Canada, and he was talking about how drug overdoses have increased in the COVID pandemic era that we are still in, and apparently we're going to be in for quite some time, as opioid users found themselves alone and without the usual safety nets. And more than 40 states have reported that there has been an increase in opioid-related deaths. And for example, in Arkansas, the use of Narcan, which is an overdose-reversing drug, has tripled. So needless to say, people are having a really difficult time, over and above the worries about jobs, about losing businesses. As I walk around the streets of New York, it is so depressing to see all of the stores for rent signs, going out of business signs, and look at the impact that all of this is having on individuals and on families. Still a lot of concerns about the virus and about health insurance. And is my health insurance going to cover any possible catastrophic illness? But more and more, I'm hearing from people about the social isolation. I think we're doing the very best that we can do with Zoom and Skype, and trying to stay connected with social media and with emails. And yet people more and more are telling me that they really miss that face-to-face contact. I mean, I, for one, haven't seen a patient since March. My entire practice in New York City and in East Hampton happens to be on Zoom. And is it effective? Well, you know, the studies say that people are really getting used to, doing therapy on social media. But I miss seeing everybody. And I know that people actually miss coming to my office and having just real live face-to-face interactions. Of course, we're doing the very best that we can possibly do. And, another statistic is showing that the self-help hotline calls are surging. And I see that as the positive things, because one of the things that I've been talking about here on the Ask Beattie Show for, well, actually today is the 316th Ask Beattie Show here on the Progressive Radio Network, is really trying to encourage all of you that we do not need to navigate life's challenges on our own, and that the very best thing that we can do when we're feeling overwhelmed and depressed and anxious and lonely, as so many people are today, is to really reach out and ask for help. And what we're also seeing, and I think you have to be very careful about this, if you are someone who is prone to drinking too much, because we're seeing The alcohol consumption has jumped 75% during the last number of months, wine 66%. And now that the weather is starting to get a little bit cooler, people are going to be tending to stay in more and eating more and exercising less. So the point is that we are going to have to be very, very mindful of making sure that we are living our lives and we are navigating our day-to-day lives in ways that are really in our best interest. And what does that mean? Well, you know, Dr. Gary Noh, we talk about the plant-based diets, which is very important. And of course, the importance of exercise and weight training and meditation, if that is your kind of way of relaxing. And making sure, even if it is on Zoom, having really supportive people in our life and trying as best as we possibly can to eliminate all toxins, of course, chemical toxins. And when I talk about toxins, I also talk about toxic people, and that sometimes means friends and family. And when you're feeling really, really down, you know, it's so important to actually take some action. And for some people, it may be dancing and listening to music, even if that is the last thing in the world that you feel like doing. Sometimes we have to take action and do the things, even though we may not feel like doing anything, that hopefully are going to help us and propel us to feel better about our lives. Positive visualization, and that's something that I've been doing more and more lately, just trying to think of images and trying to visualize scenes that made me feel really happy and good and safe and well. And it's really amazing how strong positive visualization can really be in terms of really changing our mood. And don't forget the herbal teas and the aromatherapy, the essential oils. And if you haven't got anybody to talk to, and if you're not at a point where you really want to reach out and ask for help, I have found that journaling is something that is very important. It's private, and it is a way where you can really get out your feelings. And some people that I know, in fact, patients, they will journal on a day-to-day basis, and it's sort of an interesting way to be able to monitor, you know, how one is feeling from one week to another. And online again, you have the opportunity of joining a number of different support groups like 12-step programs. And again, it is about connecting, and we all need to have that connection. We all need to feel that connection. And, you know, prior to the pandemic, I was one person who was always talking about the importance of minimizing social media and cell phones and computers. And I still feel that it's really important to find a balance between spending time on the computer and doing other things like exercising and reading perhaps. But if this is the way, if this is the primary way where you are feeling better because you are connecting in some hopefully meaning way, then so be it, certainly at least for now. And, you know, I was also reading an interesting piece in the New York Times about how more and more people, of course, are seeing their psychiatrists and seeing their therapists online. And there were predictions years ago that psychotherapy was actually poised to go virtual. And who would have thought that now I have found, well, of course, in my practice, it's 100%, and studies have found that over 90% of people and more doctors, internists and cardiologists and other medical people are now seeing their patients online. Although I can imagine it would be virtually impossible. You can't examine a patient online, but certainly in the mental health world, you can certainly have very, very in-depth conversations that can be extremely helpful, since people, for the most part these days, either don't want to go and see their therapists, and many therapists, including myself, are just feeling very, very reluctant to have people come into my office. So the virus has really forced medical centers around the world to partly adopt, and I think it's going to be happening more and more, telemedicine with varying results. And as I mentioned, some patients are not comfortable with the technology or can't afford it. Others need services that cannot be provided entirely online, like, for example, prenatal care. But in the world of mental health and in the world of psychiatry, this is a special case, because experts have predicted for years that the field's most intimate treatment, psychotherapy, or the so-called talking cure, was poised to go largely virtual for many or most patients. And frankly, I never, ever had ever thought about doing virtual therapy with anyone. It had never even crossed my mind until the pandemic. So in March, actually, 2020, federal health officials loosened the restrictions on practicing across state lines and have begun to expand reimbursement. I know that I see couples who are in Washington, I see people who are in California, and since everything is on Zoom, there aren't issues, you know, in that way. The insurance companies are now accepting psychotherapy services from out-of-state providers. And if you are someone who's actually thinking about going into therapy and you do have insurance or you have out-of-network insurance benefits, it's really important to check before you you start therapy, because you certainly don't want to have any financial surprises. So what we're seeing, we're certainly seeing a lot of changes. And studies so far are showing that online therapy is something where people are not losing a lot in terms of effectiveness. In one study, for instance, there was a team led by researchers based at the Baltimore Veterans Affairs Medical Center, and they happened to track more than 100 veterans being treated for depression over 6 months. Half of these veterans were engaging in traditional in-person therapy, the other half receiving care online. So both groups improved on standard measures by the same amount, which is interesting. And another study led by a Leslie Moreland of the Department of Veteran Affairs Pacific Islands Healthcare System actually compared in-person and virtual talk therapy for 120 veterans with post-traumatic stress. And it reached a similar finding that improvement, and this is something that's really good news and important to know, that improvement across the board showed no difference between the groups, between the people who had their sessions in a mental health practitioner's office or people who were actually having therapy online. So the evidence so far from these equivalency trials comparing face-to-face versus over video every trial so far shows no difference in clinical outcomes. And that is really important to know. And it's really good news. And on top of that, about 90% of patients report being satisfied with the experience. And what I have found with my own patients is that the younger ones, people in their 20s and 30s who've really grown up for the most part on social media and with technology, they are the ones that are perfectly satisfied with all of this. I, on the other hand, am still getting used to it, and I am still missing seeing people in my office face to face. Well, there was an interesting article, too, that I wanted to share with you from the New York Times. How to cope when everything keeps changing. And that is something that we are all having to deal with every single day. So how do you make plans when it's really impossible to make plans? When the ground beneath our feet is constantly shifting. I mean, who could have ever imagined or predicted? Maybe the scientists could have, the pandemic. Who could have ever predicted that it was going to be lasting? And many experts are saying that it's going to be lasting for quite some time, despite what we hear from some of the so-called experts at the White House. And it's been really a challenge. I mean, we walk around the streets here in New York City. I think that most people, or certainly people that I see in our neighborhood on the Upper West Side, are compliant. They are keeping their social distance. They are wearing masks. And of course, now there are a lot of restaurants that are serving out of doors. So people are starting to, you know, really mill about. And yet we have to be very, very, very careful. And what it seems is that planning for anything more than a week, it can feel futile. I mean, one day we hear that we can send the kids to school. The other day, they're not so sure. Then the kids are going to be going part-time, and then maybe they should be going full-time, and then maybe they shouldn't be going at all. So that there are just so many endless changing and changes that we are having to deal with. So what to do? And there are no quick fixes. But I think that there's some good advice in this article. Number one, how to overcome mental barriers. And we all know that during a setback, it's very easy to get stuck in feelings of panic and disappointment. And those feelings, those initial feelings of panic and disappointment and upset and anger and depression, they're all normal feelings. But of course, we have to find a way to move beyond. And one of the most psychologically jarring things for many of us right now is the radical upheaval to our daily life. And many of us had already made predecisions that determined how we spend the majority of our day, what time we wake up, what we wear to work, what time we go to work, where we eat lunch, etc. And now suddenly all of those predecisions have had to be made anew. But the actual key, when you think about it, to mental agility and not falling into this anxiety spiral, is to remind ourselves that it is okay to switch gears. Not only is it okay, but that it is necessary. It is a requirement in life because, look, so often we're on a path and things seem to be going well. And then seemingly from nowhere, there are changes, there are shifts. And one way to achieve this mindset is to use a technique called temporal distancing, which is like having access to your own personal mental time machine where you can transcend the here and now and visualize the future. And many people throughout their lives encounter adversity. I mean, we all encounter adversity that doesn't go their way or is unexpected. And when people successfully navigate these new life adversities, they are likely to learn things about themselves that they didn't realize. And I think that these days, more than ever, we are all having to shift our gears over and over and over again. But this is not at all to diminish the very real feelings of disappointment and angst that we all experience after a setback, especially when we've invested emotional and financial resources. But if we can approach our failed plans, or let's not even use failed plans, our change plans that we were hoping were not going to change, with a sense of our own resilience, we are better able to overcome these challenges. So yes, we're going to be upset, and it is going to take a little bit of time to figure out exactly what the next step is going to be for all of us. But if we find it within ourselves, after we work through the depression and the anger and the anxiety and this disappointment, to embrace possibilities, it's absolutely amazing what we might discover about the world out there, and more importantly, about ourselves. Because those of us who are serial planners, we often get stuck in rehashing our losses rather than trust in our capacity to find new solutions. But I think it's important to emotionally go back and emotionally look at what we did and what we didn't do and what happened and what we didn't and what didn't happen. And that emotional process, I believe, certainly as a psychotherapist, is really important for us to be able to then move on. We have to look at what we did. What could we have done differently? We do have to examine the choices that we made honestly and authentically. And if the choices that we made, if some of the choices that we made in the past did not work out for us, we then have to be clear what those choices were and make sure that we are not going to continue to make choices that are not in our best interest, that are either destructive or self-destructive. So I think that being mindful is really important. It's not being negative, but it is being mindful of what works, what didn't work, and what moving forward is going to be a way that we can live, that we can actually embrace. But the other thing too is that operating from a place of fear, and I think a lot of people these days are feeling very fearful about all kinds of things. But operating from a place of fear really doesn't allow us to tap into our full cognitive abilities. And this mindset, this fear mindset, it also undermines the quality of our decision-making. It stifles our creativity, and it impairs our ability to take the most constructive actions we have within us to take. Because if we continue to cling to the disappointments and the canceled plans, for interest, then we aren't leaving room for new possibilities. So again, I think it's important to go back and take a look at what we hope for, what didn't happen in our lives, what did happen in our lives that were not things that worked best for us. And then find ways to start to move forward. And I really recommend that, you know, we write things down. Okay, your job that you loved, you've lost the job, the business went out of business, and now you're in a new position. And I think it's important to look at what are some of the new possibilities that you really do want to explore. Because right now, people are dealing with immense uncertainty. I mean, that's true. But the truth is, you know, when you think about it, that we've never really had certainty. We thought we did, but, you know, in reality, it was really an illusion. Because when something changes, our mind goes into battle arguing against that change. I know there are a lot of people who say that they love change. I'm one of these people who really loves routine. I like to know every day basically what is going to happen. And I'm someone that has had a lot of difficulty with change, and yet one has to work it through and move forward and get used to the fact that life really is a series of changes. Because when something changes, our mind goes into battle, typically arguing against that change, because we are wired to crave comfort and certainty. And by trusting in our innate capacity to handle change and adapt to new situations, it makes life moving forward a lot easier. Because instead of getting stuck in a thought loop of what could have been or look what happened, we need to find ways to zoom up and look at what's going on around us through a larger lens, and what now. And I know so often with my patients, you know, we talk about, you know, their families of origin and what happened and what didn't happen. And it's at some point, I mean, people have to understand we can't change history. And how much time do we want to spend living in the past when there is the present and there is the future? And we have to understand the things that we can change, and we also have to understand the things that we cannot change, and we cannot change anything that happened in our history, and find ways to be able to move forward. And this is not something that is oftentimes easy to do, which is why it is so important that we have people in our lives that we can talk to, hopefully good friends, and if you're lucky, family. And if you can't talk to your friends and you can't talk to your family, then the very best thing that you can do is to find someone, and I believe a qualified therapist, who can help you gain a new perspective. After all, getting second opinions on everything in our lives, I think it's a really, really good idea. And life is very complicated. And I don't feel that it is a weakness, it is a strength. If we realize that we want to get a second opinion or a third opinion about our relationship, about our marriage, about our eating disorders, about our depression, about our anxiety. And when you think about it, and I use the example of professional athletes a lot, professional athletes, they have teams, they have managers, they have coaches, they have fitness people, they have learned. I mean, really, really serious professional athletes have learned that they cannot do all of this on their own. And I think that we as human beings, we also have to take that in and realize that we too need a team of people in our lives to help us navigate the complexities of life. So what's the bottom line here? The bottom line is that a big part of stretching our mental flexibility comes down to accepting that what we thought we knew was unknowable really to begin with. And once we decide to accept that reality, scary as it might be, most people find it actually to be liberating, accepting the reality of what we can't control. Once we get to that point where we're able to accept it, it sets our minds free to explore the possibilities of what we can control. And then we need to take action. We can process all of this for years and years, but faced with unexpected change, taking immediate steps to improve our situation can help us quickly switch gears. And the key is to start very, very small. Okay, pick something that is so easy and so certain to be accomplished that it's almost comical. And a strategy that is recommended is to approach your planning the way a scientist would, by conducting small experiments. For example, and I thought this was a really good example, if your plan consists of only online grocery shopping from a particular store this month, but you find that there are things you need at another store, then you still won because you invalidated the hypothesis that suggested that you only need one store. There are always options. Sometimes we have to be really, really creative, and it certainly takes some time to figure out what to do. Plan A hasn't worked. Plan B hasn't worked. So what is our plan C and possibly our plan D going to really look like? And I think in the final analysis, we need to choose courage. Many of us, we set intentions and made assumptions at the beginning of the year, and we were devastated when the majority of these plans fell apart. But according to experts, changing the way we view these experiences can help us focus on growth. And again, this is not something that is just going to happen overnight. And reframing unexpected change is saying, I can learn from this and hopefully my future will be better from it. I mean, we can go back and we can look at mistakes that we made, and we can, you know, look at our life in a very doom and gloom way. Or what we can say to ourselves is, look, I made mistakes along the way. I made some bad choices, but this is what I have learned from the mistakes and some of the bad choices that I made. And in this way, we're able to move forward. And one of my favorite phrases at home and with patients is lessons to be learned. What have we learned? What have we learned from our disappointments? What have we learned from our successes? And in this way, if you have this kind of a mindset, you're able to move forward and stop beating yourself up for things that you may have done or things that you didn't do that you would do now if you knew now what you knew then, or if you knew then what you knew now. And this is where courage is really something that we need to choose. And it also helps to know that these kinds of issues are happening to every person in the world. There is no one who is immune from life's challenges, from life's disappointments. And the very best time to practice proactive communication, to practice updating our plans and having a flexible mindset, really is today. And another way to cope with the shifting of our lives, and of course our lives are shifting, sometimes it feels every minute, is to embrace the psychological concept of hardiness or transformational coping. I think easier said than done, which teaches us to perceive stressful life events less as threats, again, as more as opportunities for personal development. And this is not something that is easy to do, and this is not something that is going to happen overnight. And if you are dealing with crises and disappointments, as so many people's are, it's very difficult in the midst of feeling so badly about what's going on in your life to say, oh, well, this is just going to be a wonderful opportunity. And yet, as we work through the disappointments and the upsets, hopefully, there really are going to be opportunities and lessons that we have from the difficulties that that we have gone through. And choosing courage over our sense of powerlessness is what actually helps us cope with sudden change and allows us to foster more empathy and meaning. And while there's no denying the heartache and hardship of this turbulent time, it is important to be intentional, to look at ways that we can transform it into a powerful catalyst for transformational change. I mean, if we don't take this route, what are the options so that we just stay in a very depressed and anxious state? And I think that there's times to be in a depressive and anxious state. Hopefully there is going to be some time limit that you're going to give yourself before either reaching out and asking for help or making a mindset change where you're then able to say, okay, we can't change what's happened. Today is a brand new day. Today is a new day of looking at new possibilities. And people are having to do this every single day. People who have lost their jobs, people who have lost their businesses, people who felt that there was going to be consistency in their lives. Who would have dreamed that salaries are gone, that unemployment insurance that was promised may not have arrived, that the stimulus that we were promised that we were going to be getting may or may not come. People are losing their homes, they're losing their businesses, so that there is a complete mindset that is having to take place every single day. And frankly, I don't know anyone, not anyone in my personal life and not anyone in my professional life, who has been immune from the things that are going on again, which have really been exacerbated since the pandemic. And again, reminding ourselves of the lessons that we've learned from past runs, of bad luck, of bad choices, can help us cope with whatever curveballs are thrown in our way. And this is difficult. I think it's very difficult for the majority of people who've been throwing a lot of curveballs, particularly in the last many, many months, to feel that they need to do this on their own. And this is where, you know, I go on and talk about the importance of reaching out and asking for help and getting a second opinion and getting another perspective. And it can make all the difference in the world, because we will remember that the way we triumphed and grew and became stronger in the past periods was not by having a perfectly scripted plan, although many of us would like to have a perfectly scripted plan, but of course that's not reality in this world with perfect knowledge of the future. But instead, right now, particularly, we are being forced to make one decision at a time. So again, we need to find ways to overcome the mental barriers. We have to allow ourselves and give ourselves permission to embrace possibilities. And there are always, always possibilities. You may not know what these possibilities are today. Maybe tomorrow you're going to have a better sense or a newfound sense of some possibilities that you hadn't thought about yesterday. And this is one of the things about just writing down ideas, things that you think you would like to embrace, things that you would like to do, maybe new jobs that you would like to apply for. And yes, the rejections may be coming in every day. And yet, what are the consequences to simply throwing up our hands and giving up? And I think that accepting the fact that life is a series of never-ending changes and never-ending challenges, that is the reality of what life is really about, that we have to find ways to accept that and find new ways to navigate our lives given the reality of ups and downs and changes and plans that did not go our way. So I'm hoping that some of these ideas that you will actually be able to incorporate into your life. Because again, I want to really stress the fact that virtually everybody that I'm seeing in the lobby of our apartment building this morning, I had my weekly chiropractor adjustment. And I see some of these people every single week because we go at the same time. And I was asking people, you know, how are you doing? And this one said, what a terrible week I had. And I've been feeling so down and so depressed, so that I think that people are really having a lot of difficulties navigating this new reality across the board. And when you think about it, I mean, look at the pressures on relationships. People are working at home, and especially if there are children, many people are not getting a break. They're not getting a breather, which is why every single day, even if it's just for a few minutes, that you take some time for yourself, whether it's to just take a walk, you know, around the block, or meditate, or in my particular case, I have my free weights in my office. And if I start to get tense, if I start to get upset, for me, exercise has always been a way to help deal with worries and to help deal with anxiety. So again, being good to ourselves, even though life right now for so many people feels so out of control, finding positive things that you can do every single day to nurture yourself, whether or not it's just finding a movie, maybe a mindless movie on television that will help you relax, or having maybe a favorite food that you normally would not eat that would give you a little bit of, a little bit of pleasure. And in the midst of all of this, I think many, many people are not able or are not really taking the time to nurture themselves in these little ways. And these little ways really do make a difference. Well, shifting gears, we talk about relationships all of the time here on the Ask Beady Show. And of course, we know that in the world of marriage and divorce, we are not doing all that well. As I tell you every single week, the divorce rate for first marriages is 48%, 67% of second marriages end in divorce, and 74% of couples find themselves before a judge in a divorce court. And we know about the domestic violence rates. Four women are killed every single day by their so-called intimate partner. And, I was a guest on a podcast a couple of days ago, and I was actually quoting none other than Warren Buffett, who said that the most important decision that anybody can make is marrying the right person. But here's an article. Actually, there are a couple of articles that I really wanted to share with you based on some recent talk show guests who proclaimed that they were done with relationships and that they were done with dating. Sharon Stone was one. She's been married a couple of times. She said, "I'm done." Jane Fonda on Drew Barrymore's show said that she was not interested in relationships. She'd had enough sex in her life and she was done. The host, Drew Barrymore, had said that she hadn't had a date in 5 years and didn't sound as if she was particularly interested in having a date anytime soon. So we're hearing a lot from people who maybe are just tired of the whole relationship thing. So I found an interesting article written by a Dr. Bella DiPaolo. Her book, Living Single, and I'm suspecting that she is single. So this is the profound rewards of staying single. And what she's found is that over time, people who stay single may experience more happiness and growth. So what does that mean for how single life is actually experienced by those who never marry? In many important ways, single people do defy stereotypes about their supposedly sad, lonely, and empty lives. And people who stay single actually, and this is according to some studies, report more personal growth. So here we have it in an analysis of data from the National Survey of Families and Households. More than 1,000 people who had always been single were compared to more than 3,000 people of comparable ages who had been continuously married. The people who stayed single compared to those who stayed married reported experiencing more personal growth. They were more likely to agree with the statements such as, "For me, life has been a continuous process of learning, changing, and growth. Secondly, I think it is important to have new experiences that challenge how you think about yourself and the world." Let me just say that it is certainly possible in healthy relationships and in healthy marriages to have a continuous process of learning, changing, and growth, and to experience the challenges in your world as ongoing challenges that you embrace. Okay. So, other findings. People who stay single, and this is according to Dr. Bella DiPaolo's research, people who stay single report more autonomy and self-determination. So in the same study, people who stayed single compared to those who stayed married were more likely to agree with statements such as, I judge myself by what I think is important, not by the values of what others think is important. And I believe and I know, and I've been practicing now for over 35 years, that you can certainly be in a relationship and you can be married and you can be an independent thinker. I have confidence in my opinions, even if they are different from the way that most other people think. Again, you can be married, you can be in a relationship, you can also be single, and you can have confidence in all of these different ways, even if your opinions are different from the way most other people think. Of course, she's making a case, and some of these studies are naturally making cases for the benefits of being single. And I think that if people embrace and want to be single, that's great. And if they choose to change their minds, or if they are people who want to be in relationships, who want to be married, then that's all good too. And there was another study, a study of more than 10,000 Australian women in their mid-70s compared. Now, this is an interesting study, compared lifelong single women with no children to four other groups of women, married with children, married with no children, previously married with children, and previously married with no children. So listen to the results. The lifelong single women with no kids stood out from the other women in several impressive ways. For example, they were more optimistic, less stressed. Well, we know that parenting is really stressful. It's wonderful, it's terrific, but it is also extraordinarily, extraordinarily stressful. So again, the lifelong single women with no kids stood out from the other women in the following ways. They were more highly educated, more likely to say that they could manage easily on their income, more likely to be active members of formal social groups, and more likely to provide volunteer services. Well, of course, they would have a lot more time than women who are married and women who have children. So compared to the married women with or without kids, they also had bigger social networks. Well, that makes a lot of sense too, because the single women would have a lot more time. And those of us who have raised children know that it is a full-time job, even when the kids are in school, and that you're juggling a lot, the children, and where you're going to be taking the children. And if you are married or if you're in a relationship, you have to find somehow to find time for the children and your partner and yourself and your job. So it makes total sense that they had bigger social networks. And on four out of about a dozen measures of physical health, the lifelong single women with no kids fared particularly well compared to the women. So what were the findings? They were least likely to be smokers. So maybe they had less stress, or they had more ability to realize and to educate themselves about the perils of smoking. They were also likely to be non-drinkers. and they had the healthiest body mass index and had the fewest number of diagnoses of major illnesses. Well, again, that makes a lot of sense. All they really had to do in life was take care of themselves. They didn't have the responsibilities that come with being a parent. And on seven other measures of health, there were no differences amongst the groups. Only on one measure did the lifelong single women fare a bit less well than two of the other four groups. Now, this was something that I found really interesting, is that for Black people, staying single and living alone can be a path to the middle class. Because in research that challenges the conventional wisdom that amongst Blacks, getting married is the route to attaining middle class status. And of course, I would say getting an education, of course, is the route to attaining middle class status. A sociologist, Chris Marsh, documented a surprising alternative route, that staying single and living alone, that path is especially effective for Black women. And, you know, I'm just curious whether or not the results of these studies and whether these studies have been replicated. You know, it's one thing to have a study and it's one thing to have findings, but I would like to see whether or not there were other studies that either replicated or did not replicate the findings of these particular studies. Now, what else do we know from this particular study? In later life, lifelong single people find single life less challenging than previously married people. Of course, they're used to being single. Here we have a study of people 65 and older who were divorced, widowed, or had always been single, asked participants about the possible challenges and strains of single life. And those difficulties included, for example, dissatisfaction with social life, intimacy, and having people available to help. The lifelong single people reported experiencing less strain than the previously married people, because these lifelong single people had a lifelong opportunity to create social networks for themselves, and would have made sure that actually happened, since there were no children or husbands or wives who would be there to support them. No, I think this is very interesting, and I found it very interesting. I tuned into a couple of the talk shows just for a couple of minutes, and to hear some of these celebrity women saying, "I am done. I am done with marriage." And some of these women were saying that they were done with sex as well. Well, I am looking at the clock here, and I had a lot more that I wanted to talk about staying single, and about the importance of staying single until you meet someone who actually complements your life in a way that makes you better. If not, it's not worth it. And that is for single people who would like to be in a relationship. But I think we can pick this up next week. So again, I want to thank you all for listening and for tuning in every week here on the Ask Beattie Show. And I do appreciate your comments and your texts and your emails. And I look forward to talking with you next week here on the Ask Beattie Show on the Progressive Radio Network. So listen, everybody, have a good rest of the day. And I'll talk with you next week. And my favorite song that ends the show every week is "What the World Needs Now Is Love, Sweet Love." So remember to do everything you possibly can to love yourself. And we all need to do a much, much, much better job in finding ways to love each other. Goodbye, everybody. Talk to you next week.